This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrics.
Ata, welcome to another episode of Hashtag Politrics with Botsang Modimowame Muilwa. This is Wow, What a Week. Botsang, welcome, brother.
Brother Fresh, thank you very much. Let me welcome you back.
It's good to be back.
And good morning to the followers and the viewers.
Yes, sir.
It's good to have you back.
Where do we even start? It's been a wild week of politics and geopolitics.
The world is busy, bro.
Yes, sir.
You know, one of the days during the week, I slept like at 2 a.m., 3 a.m. actually, watching the American first debate of the two presidents, and then the BRICS on the other, and then the time difference, that's quite a lot happening.
What are your thoughts on the debate between Vice President Kamala Harris and Trump?
Should we start there?
Yeah, might as well.
Look, very, very impressed. But if you know how the American politics work, these debates, they tend to influence the votes and the thinking of the people,
but
especially
do they,
in the U.S. I think they do to some extent, Fresh. I've got family in the U.S.
You know what I think they do personally? I think it's like a peacock dancing. We're happy for you, you can dance. But I don't know if you want to convince me to vote peacock versus a pigeon, for instance.
To some extent, I think, I don't know what I was talking to you. Actually, I was talking to Eugene about it last week to say, that's why these debates happen in the last few weeks before the elections. We are now just below 2 months to the elections in U.S. They tend to influence a certain margin of the voters in the U.S. Because people tend to listen to the rhetoric. Americans are naturally good public speakers. And I was telling somebody the other day that, I don't know if you know, that in the U.S., one of the things that children learn at primary school is public speaking.
Yes, yes, yes.
Understand? So they become very good orators and good speakers. And, you know, Kamala Harris has demonstrated, actually, during the week, that he's a better speaker. She's a better speaker than Donald Trump. She was much more factual. You know, if I was an American, I'll vote for Trump. You know, that's my preferred candidate. I also think the world is a much more safer and a better place with Trump being in power in the U.S. than the Democrats or anybody else so far.
Why would you say that? Because Trump strikes me as a very erratic, very knee-jerk.
But he's not a warmonger, and that's one thing I bang upon. And he has several times and repeatedly said the world is on the brink of a third world war, and it's going to be worse because there's nuclear involved at the moment. And the Biden administration, of which Kamala Harris is a deputy to Biden, are more likely to put the world into a third world war than his administration. And I believe him for that. We have always spoke about how during his administration, he actually brought soldiers back from war-torn areas than starting a war, unlike all other Americans. President, and I give him credit for that. But I also think, Fresh, personal relationships of politician tends to, you know, demean a little bit the war talk and all that. We know that Trump has a relationship with President Putin, and I think if he comes into power in the U.S., there is much more chance of wars in the Middle East as well as in Ukraine. The negotiations may be fast tracked.
Okay.
There'll be much more engagements between Donald Trump administration and Putin administration. He is a typical white American, a typical Republican, racist to some extent. But I think he will be much more harder towards the Israelis and supplying of arms. Remember, he's also a business person, so it is of his business interest. He's got, you know, investments of aircrafts and hotels chains, both in the Middle East, in Latin America, and the U.S. So it is of good interest for him to have a peaceful world.
I hear you.
Than to go into a full-fledged war. Somebody may stand up and say to me, but Harris also did not talk war. He's talking about how peace should happen. But we all know they all talk like that.
Yes.
They all talk peace. But to this day, they still supply Israel with arms. They still supply Ukraine with arms. We have heard how Russia has come and said they even have created nuclear laboratories in Ukraine. If they meant business, Kamala Harris is the vice president of the USA. Mm. She has been a senator. If they meant business, during this last year, it's almost a year since the war broke up. It's 11 months exactly this week, actually, since the war broke up in Gaza. Mm. Why wouldn't Kamala Harris do what the Canadians have done during the course of this week? Canada has issued a statement to say they are stopping the supply of weapons or ammunition or aid, anything to Israel.
Because they're being used to kill children.
Exactly, you understand? Why wouldn't Harris do that as the vice president of the country? He is actually the president de facto since, sure, you know, the old man is tired and literally has retired. Mm. But look, this was one of the first debates. I will give Harris 7, you know, out of 10, and I will give Trump 5 out of 10. But I think Trump was caught off guard. I also think his media people relied more on the normal rhetoric statements that Trump has, while Harris focused on the actual governance and administration and what the government has done.
Because when it comes to just simple fact-checking, Trump was found wanting almost all the time.
Yes.
Because Trump will decide that, and last week I saw a pig flying, and that pig had a Democrat written on it. Therefore, the Democrats and pigs like flying.
Yeah.
Trump will say that straight face, like it's a fact, like it happened.
And you know, when I watched that debate, Harris actually, in responding to the allegations or utterances of President Trump, you know, President or Vice President Harris came back and said, but you are lying on this, you know, and saying it so diplomatically. Mm. The other thing that made him good, he was a she, it's on him, her. She was very diplomatic, she was very calm. She allowed Trump to finish his utterances and rhetoric statements, and he came back responding, you know, proficiently and professionally. If elections were determined by those debates, Harris would have been the president today. Sure. But like I said, they have a small influence towards that. Because, you know, like I said, Americans, more like South Africans, or South Africans are more like Americans, they tend to make decisions based on emotions of that particular moment.
Sure.
And 7 weeks into elections, a very short space of time. And we know that they will stop at some stage. They will not stop on the last day. They have to stop. I think there's two more debates still coming, but let's see how it goes.
In fact, since we're still, you know, abroad, we might as well go to Russia, NATO, and what's happening in the Ukraine. Because I know Ukraine want more money.
Yes.
But the Ukraine have also asked if it's possible for them to go further into Russia.
Into Russia, yes. Look, first of all, they've asked more money from the NATO member states. We have seen a little bit of support from countries like Finland. Mm. And you know, those countries that have now allowed NATO forces to can dock on them, like Latvia and all those small countries that are bordering Ukraine and Russia. So it is much more of a problem fresh for Ukraine at the moment, because these European countries are faced with challenges. The Germans, who have the biggest military base for the NATO and the Americans, you know, outside the USA in Europe, they've run out of resources. They cannot continue. Mm-hmm. And the right wingers are coming up, right-wing parties in the Federative Republic of Germany, to say we cannot afford to be funding Ukraine anymore. We are suffering, you know, financially, but also there's issues of gas from Russia. So they can't sustain the war anymore. You understand? I mean, it's almost 2 years that this war has erupted, and it's not sustainable. I do not know if Ukraine, depending on what is going to happen with the American elections are going to influence what is going to happen in funding the war with Russia, the Ukrainian war with Russia. And we must also remember that the biggest funder, contributor of NATO, whether it's militarily or financially, is the USA and the United Kingdom. So if the US, let's assume, you know, talk hypothetically that Trump's come into power, and obviously there'll be cut off financial money to go and go to it, so they cannot sustain the war. Germany can't do it. Although the other challenge that Ukraine is faced with is that Russia has rallied other countries around itself and the former Balkan states and stuff. They've rallied them. They've got support now. Whether it's military drills, whether it's the use of the airspace, or whether it's people talking diplomatically. I mean, we've come across one of the leading presidents of the world from South America, or some from South America as well as Eastern Europe, have come up to say this must now stop, this must now end.
Yeah.
So President Putin has done very well to can rally other forces which are anti-NATO, one being mainly China, obviously, as their best friend. But to the surprise of many, the Americans have now accused Iran for supplying ballistic missiles.
I was about to say Germany, the USA, and France imposing sanctions.
New sanctions.
On Iran.
It's additional sanctions, bro. Yeah. It's additional. Remember, Iran has almost 30 sanctions, whether they are economic or military or travel embargoes. They've added a new one, those three countries now, to say, because it is alleged that Iran has supplied ballistic missiles to President Putin or to Russia in preparations of much more onslaught on Ukraine. Remember a few months back also, Ukraine had entered the territory of Russia, and they've been pushed back now. And it's a clear sign that they were much more armed.
Yeah.
They caught Russia by surprise, but Russia has managed to push them back. And they had much more sophisticated weapons. And Iran had said to its friend, you can use our missiles. That is an allegation which Iran has denied. Obviously, politicians and military people will deny it.
Nobody has ever said, yes, you are right.
Nobody has ever said, yes, I've received. Even Israel will deny that they've received military weapons from the U.S. while they are being used. But, those are some of the challenges that Russia is being faced with regarding the Ukrainian war. And what makes it more difficult now, Tato, is that we are left with, less than a month? That Russia will be hosting the BRICS summit.
BRICS summit, yes.
Which we all know that it's not the summit of those 3 to 4 days. No, it has already started. In the week that we are just closing now, the BRICS summit of special advisors of what do they call the military and security senior officials have started meeting this past week to discuss obviously security issues. And security in this instance does not only mean military, it means security intelligence and how they're going to cooperate. And remember, it's no longer only now the 5 countries of BRICS, it's BRICS plus. So we are talking about 9 to 11 countries and the ones that have put their application, which is going to be considered. So this is going to be, in my view, the biggest BRICS summit ever since the formation of BRICS. And this happens in the middle of the Gaza war as well as the Ukraine-Russia war. So a very, very challenging circumstance. But I pray that Trump wins. And again, this is Bhutan talking. I pray that Trump wins because I have hope that if Trump wins, or the Republicans, who are more hardliners than the Democrats, there'll be peace in the world. I'm concerned about the world peace. The war in Russia and Ukraine may stop. And what causes this war? It's money. It's those who have arms, they are boasting like with toys, who has a better toy than the other one. And it's money. I mean, I looked at the map during the course of this week, how there are reserves. There's another thing that someone I've read it from a Russia television article. The coal reserves in Ukraine, very shocking. And what does Europe need now? It's coal.
Yes.
That's what they need more than anything else, and more than even oil. They need coal now more than anything else. So we must look at the coal reserves in Ukraine. And one starts to understand that this whole war, the same as other wars we had in Africa, especially in the DRC, it's mineral-based. In South Sudan, in the DRC, I think the same situation with Ukraine. Despite that politically, Ukraine was being used and seen as a springboard to can attack or to keep Russia at bay away from Europe. That's just politically, militarily, but there's a lot of natural resources in that country that I think they are at stake.
Now, speaking of Russia, I mean, Russia have been stepping up their relations with countries in the Sahel region.
Yes, yes.
And obviously, the more we play with Russia, surely the more we risk AGOA going up in smoke.
Yeah.
Or not?
Well, Flesh, look, that's a very complex one. We know how the Americans think. If they really feel like some African countries, and you specifically mentioned the Sahel countries, which has also seen a rebellious position, you know, in those, we have seen how Burkina Faso is leading in there with ditching everything that smells the West. They went to an extent of even ditching an ECOWAS passport, because most of the Sahel countries, or a few of them at the moment, they believe that ECOWAS, which is the regional economic body, is compromised and is being controlled by the West. So countries like Russia and China will take opportunity of that. They will not leave that opportunity. But I don't think Russia is just making a footprint in Africa. There has always been historically very good relationships politically and militarily between the former Soviet Union and the current, you know, Federative Russia. So I think they are asserting themselves and taking an advantage of a compromise that Africans are waking up now. Mm-hmm. Africans are saying, but the West has been misleading us. Let us look to the East. And also, if you look at most of the foreign aid that Russia provides to many African states, it does not come with the same conditions that the West is putting. You know, we know what France did in the same region. We know what the UK has done in SADC. We know what America has infiltrated in between, even if they can stand up and say they never colonized any, but they are a colony themselves. They are occupying the land of the Native Americans, and they've got involved in wars in Africa. And Russia has always historically been countering that. And now it's an opportunity for Russia. And also what the media, I think what Russia is doing is to counter what the media has portrayed, to say, you know, Russians are warmongers, they are criminals, they are, you know, if we look at all the movies and the media, I regard movies as part of the media, understand? What do we know about Russians? People with scary voices who are militant, who fight.
Yeah, they go speak with the accent.
We don't look at them as scientists, as teachers. We don't look at them as doctors and as other human beings who can live peacefully and harmoniously with other nations.
In fact, we've generally almost treated Russia as the bad guy in the movies.
Yes. If they are not mafias, they are terrorists.
Exactly.
If they are not terrorists, they are gang leaders and all those kind of people. So the media is starting to play a pivotal role to say, but let us look on the other side of this country, Russia. What are they doing? And will their media houses also be closed? And it's unfortunate. You know, I was thinking about this week. Why did South Africa, for example, being a BRICS member state, having excellent relationship with Russia, because I think our relationship with Russia are excellent. They are not, you know, in the middle.
Sure.
They are very clear.
Yeah.
Why did we allow that? And I know that MultiChoice, for example, the platform that was used by Russia Television, it's a private-owned entity, but it has a government license. And it's operating within the ICASA rules in South Africa. Why did we allow them to get involved? If we say we are having a diplomatic relation of not taking sides, why did we allow MultiChoice to shut down Russia Television so that we can hear the other side of the story? Why, for example?
What if they say it was a business decision?
Well, what business, not
political?
Okay, but okay, is it a business decision as well that we see CNN and BBC, which is the American? Remember, the USA has no state-owned television. They don't have that. All these are private entities. The CNN, It's busy feeding the world lies about what is happening in the Middle East. Why is MultiChoice not shutting down or chasing away CNN on their platforms? Again, what happened to independent form of journalism and media reporting? When is it independent and when is it not independent? You understand? We have the Russian television, we have Sputnik, and many others. I mean, I think we should let the world hear both sides of the story and make decisions for themselves.
Full stop.
That's it. I'm not saying who's wrong or who's right, but let us get all the news and let the people decide who's lying and who's not lying.
I've always advocated for that because I don't agree with you, I'm not going to advocate for therefore you must be quiet and or shut down.
Exactly, exactly.
I think the more plural voices we hear, the better position we are to make decisions that are informed.
Absolutely.
And fresh. That are not forced. If you're part of us, you must believe that this nation is evil or this nation is better than the other.
Yeah.
And often it's countries that the U.S. once shut down or sanctioned that you look at the U.S. and you're like, the blood of how many people is on your hands?
Actually.
In the name of a big brother.
Yeah. Think of it now. How many wars are in the world? Which countries are involved against those other countries? Mm. Oh, it's US and Israel against everybody. Mm. It's not. There is even the NATO war there that is led in Ukraine towards Russia. It's led by the US. Mm. It's Israel against Hamas, Israel against Palestine, Israel against Iran, Israel against, and by the way, Israel is another state of the USA. Mm. You know, everything in there, the Jews, and people like to say separate between the Jews and the Zionists. Look, those people in government, the Netanyahu, they are representing the Jewish people. They are talking as representative of a Jewish state of Israel. Mm. So why would some Jewish people stand up and say they're not representing me? What has those Jews done to make sure that Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, is not representing them? They're instead funding with their business monies the Americans who are doing what? Who are giving Israel arms. Mm. So the Jewish people all over the world, from Cape Town right up to California, who are funding and paying taxes from their businesses to various regimes or administrations, they are actually funding the war against the Palestinians. And they cannot be separated from a Jewish Zionist government to their actions. They are actually worse off, because if they close the tap of funding governments that are arming Israel, we'll be having a different story. You know, the US and many other countries have listed Iran as the most dangerous and terrorist country in the world. Tell me one battle since the Iran-Iraq war or the early 80s that Iran has been involved in. One, there's not even one since that war. And we all know that the Iran-Iraq war of the early 80s was actually the creation and made by the Americans. But since that war of Iran and Iraq, Iran has never fought any country. Mm. Even if they've got missiles and nuclear armaments, and they are regarded as the world's leading terrorist country because they are assumed to be housing Hamas and Hezbollah forces.
And arming them
terrorists. And all that. Terrorists, arming terrorists, yes, in inverted commas. But is America not arming terrorists when they're not arming? Didn't they send terrorists to Afghanistan?
Mm.
You understand? Are they not arming the terrorists in Israel? Again, fresh, the way terrorists come from terrorizing people, causing terror. Mm. The children of Palestine are in terror. Mm. At the moment, because of the Americans arming their terrorists in Israel. And this is what it is.
And as always, the train is never late. Someone will always say, yeah, but what's happening in Gaza would not have happened if October 7 hadn't happened. And I can argue October 7 wouldn't have happened if for the last 60 years you haven't been slowly eating at people's land.
Yes, yes, occupying that land.
We can compare who's more wrong than the other here and carry it until the cows come home.
You come and you occupy my house or my land and you keep on taking a piece of it until I'm being pushed to the toilet with my children. And the day I said the toilet is going to explode, we can't fit in the toilet anymore, you want to say I've started the war.
Mm.
When you occupy that, but you know why? Mm. This again, if you look at history, that's all that America know. America is occupying the Native American land, the so-called Red Indians. So for them, it looks normal that the Jews who were slaughtered in Europe and accommodated in Palestine have occupied and taken over Palestine. For the Americans, it's normal because most of the people in America, including our own black brothers, they are foreigners, they are settlers. Whether they went there as slaves or they went there as merchants from the East, you know, going to the West, it doesn't matter. But majority of them are actually historically not indigenous people of the USA.
Sure.
So that's why America sees nothing wrong in land occupation. They occupy land. How many years did they occupy Afghanistan?
Can we bring it home?
Yes, brother.
Justice Minister Smelani.
Oh, yes. The Honorable Minister.
Her woes continue, it seems.
Yes.
When it rains, it pours.
Yes, brother.
What's going on?
What has happened? Now, you remember now last week or this ending week, the Portfolio Committee on Justice,
yes,
they wrapped up their internal inquiry and awaiting further information to be supplied by the Honorable Minister, Simelane, regarding the allegations and counter-allegations to say she had paid back the money. The loan she paid back in two terms in 2020 and in 2021, she's got evidence to that. So obviously the committee is going to say, come and provide the evidence. But you know what was interesting? Will they also ask for the statements of the recipient, the what do you call that company, the Gundu company? Because if I give you a POP to say I've paid Gundu back, you must be able to reconcile that with a bank statement of Gundu to show that that money came in. And you don't take the entry and the exit, the deposit. No. You must take, when you do a risk and cost analysis, you must ask for the statement 3 months before the date of payment and 3 months after to show that that exact amount of money did not enter and leave. So that's what they call in accounting terms liquid transaction.
Understand?
So she may have paid them, and after 3 days they return it. So they must normally, in accounting terms, and people who have done audit and risk, they will tell you that you ask for the statement 3 months before and 3 months after. That's one element. The other element that I had found very interesting is the chairperson. I've watched an interview during the course of the week of that portfolio committee. He was very defensive, and this is where I have a problem with lawmakers, MPs. You know, you take the minister is a member of parliament and is a member of a political party, the ANC in this instance. And then you find that in that committee, because of the ANC being in majority in government, the majority of members of that portfolio committee will be from the ANC. And you could hear the defense. You know, he tried so hard to be neutral. But he was very defensive and evasive in that interview, to an extent that they end up blaming the media. At some stage, the chairperson of that committee started blaming the media to say they've blown this thing out of proportion and the media is reporting on things that they don't have facts on. Obviously, the media will not have facts if the Minister Simelane and that portfolio committee that belongs to us, we own them, we hire them, we deploy them there through our vote. They must report to us on a regular basis. And again, you remember the minister met the president first before the committee. Then after the president, he met the ANC inquiry. What do they call it? There's a committee. Integrity committee.
Yes, sir.
Then there's an inquiry. You know what is difficult about the whole thing? Everyone waits for another one to make a decision. Now the integrity committees of the ANC, the political party that she belongs to, says it is in the hands of the president. I know President Ramaphosa is silent, but President Ramaphosa is silent because he's waiting for the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, correctly so, to finish its duties, its inquiry and investigation. But I can tell you, Fresh, it's going to be very difficult for President Ramaphosa.
I was going to say, where do you think the ultimate outcome, what the outcome is going to be?
Look, if Minister Simelane can provide material evidence
of having paid back,
of having have received the, we know she received the money, of having have paid back the money, it would have reduced a lot of burden, you know, to show that it was a loan. And she said she paid it back over 2 years, 2020, 2021. You understand? That's one.
And it's similar to Gonje, what was that PhD scenario?
The one of the lady, the former advisor, economic advisor of.
Yes.
Yeah,
For instance, even with her case,
yes,
if you've got evidence that can clear your name, you provide it.
Put it on the table, yes.
And then everything goes away.
Everything will go away, yeah.
But if you, all you're going to tell us is, I did it, but you can't say to me, here is a deposit slip. Here's my statement from when I made the deposit.
And for me, that is where the problem is. When the minister went to parliament to answer the question or to face the parliamentary committee, she knew that that was going to be her defense to say, but I've paid back the money.
So take the statement.
Why did you leave the statement behind? Your evidence, that's your prime evidence to go and share. But here is even proof that I've paid. Why do you wait for the committee to go on recess and come back and say, can you go and fetch those statements? And then bring them. And even this committee, why didn't they say to the minister, minister sitting there, to save our time and our taxes, to say to that minister, while you are sitting there, take 10 minutes break and ask your office or your personal, you know, assistant, and anybody who's sitting some, or go to your laptop, your bank, or phone your banker to can email proof of evidence. Why do they have to go and recess and say, we will come back, bring that evidence? Well, why did they do that?
It doesn't make sense.
It does make sense. It does make sense.
Are you saying they don't exist?
They no, or they're going to be cooked.
Ah.
It does make sense. They don't exist. They're going to be cooked. Fresh, I'm sitting here and I say to you, I paid pap khayat yesterday. I'm in court. They don't say go home and come back after a month with evidence. You take a break, you phone your bank, or you go to your laptop, or even your cell phone banking app. You provide that material evidence. She says 2021, bank records stay for 5 years. If it's more than 5 years, banks will have to go to the archives.
But are they?
But yes, but if it's it is within 5 years, they're accessible immediately. You phone your banker. She's a minister, for God's sake. She's a minister. She definitely has a private banker that she can call and say, on such and such a month in this year, I've made this payment. Why do they have to take a recess to go on that? But I was saying to you, what is going to make it difficult for President Ramaphosa? You see, Fresh, corruption, I always tell people, it catches up with us. We allow other people to get away with some things. And then others, they get persecuted or prosecuted. We can mention Ismakashwile versus Gwede Mantashe. You understand? Now the NPA, what do you call it, the NDPP, National Director of Public Prosecutions, Shamila Batoyi, is saying the same minister, Simelani, department, not her department, is denying them access. They're making it difficult for them.
Full access.
They have full access, not only to her case, but to also the Zondo Commission report.
Yes.
They are having difficulty. You know why? Because half of the ANC deployees that were mentioned, 90% of them were ANC people who were mentioned in the Zondo Commission. Half of them are still in cabinet. One of them is Gwede Mantashe. The second one that I know of is Menon Vula Mokonyane. I don't say they're guilty of anything. I'm saying they were mentioned in the Zondo, including the president. We remember Lucky Montana went to the Zondo Commission, mentioned the president on other things. Who's the other guy? Brian Molefe went to the Zondo Commission, mentioned President Ramaphosa on what? On Bosasa, on Glencoe, and then came Palapala. And all. What happened to all those cases about the president? This is where I link it to the Simelani case. Is President Ramaphosa going to punish Minister Simelani when there are standing allegations against himself of similar nature? So what they are trying to do is to use state organs and entities to clear Minister Simelani like they cleared the president. Remember, the president was cleared by SARB, South African Reserve Bank, South African Revenue Services. What was the other entity? National Prosecuting Authority, the Public Protector, and Parliament with votes. Five government entities cleared the president from the Wasasa thing, the Palapala thing. Everything is hanging. Now, why wouldn't the same be allocated to Minister Simelani? You see where the problem is. You do it for one person, you must do it for another. They are from the same political party.
Sure.
Unless President Ramaphosa is being put on a very tight corner by the opposition, and the opposition is no longer DA. DA must just shut up or make noise in that parliamentary committee. But if this goes to a vote to remove her, the DA will have to vote with the ANC.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they will have to vote with the ANC. And this is the situation we are in when we are in an animal farm. You know, what is good for one person is not good for the other. But I hope that the minister will provide that material evidence, whether cooked or not. It's a story for another day, because it can put bankers into trouble. It can create elements of fraud, understand? But there's another issue that I will have a problem with, and that one is standing. Conflict of interest. Did she declare, when she was the mayor, when these transactions happened with a company that is doing business with the municipality, did she declare? And that may get her into serious trouble. If she declared, it's okay. We can say the municipality had found nothing wrong with it, if she declared.
Yeah.
But, you know, declaration forms. anybody could have long stick them in into there if they were there, but they should also be on the register of the National Council of Provinces. Or you understand that, or even Salga, if they keep such records, if she declared. And now you bring the statement, you bring proof of declaration, she'll walk scot-free. And those are the two things that will actually aid Minister Simelane at the moment if she provides evidence of paying back the money. The stories that Gundo was not a financial lender, no, it's immaterial. We've got, what do you call them, Ekasi stock first, and what is the other one? Bamashunisa.
Loan sharks.
Yeah, loan sharks and all that. So if the minister says banks couldn't borrow me money for whatever reason, and they say she provided a proof that she tried to get loans from the bank.
Yeah.
She even tried to access her pension, and she was advised against, because most of that would have gone to tax. I just hope that the advisor was not Gundo himself as the financial advisors, because if the person who borrows you money was your advisor not to take part of your pension or not to go to commercial banks, then it creates much more of a problem.
Absolutely.
But again, people must not think any of us think Minister Simelane is guilty of any corruption or maladministration. She is guilty of an unethical conduct.
Sure.
That is the thing. That it's very unethical to go and do business with somebody who you do business with on behalf of the government entity, like a municipality. It's unethical. And to say an unethical conduct is a dismissible offense, it's for President Ramaphosa to apply his prerogative at the moment, unfortunately.
Yes, sir. Let's keep it moving. We often hear about business forums that want to get involved, wherever there's a building project or an infrastructure project. But often all it is just extortion. I've got several friends who own mines.
Okay.
In the Northern Cape, in Limpopo, in the Lowveld near Middelburg. And all of them complain of the same thing.
Extortions.
So often you need to have a budget just to pay people to go away, to leave you alone. That there are community members who know that if we shut down your mine just for a day, you're going to lose 5 to 10 million rand of production. So there'll all often be a ringleader that is given something just to go away.
We're living
away.
In a mafia state, man.
Absolutely. And a lot of mining operations literally have a budget unofficially to pay these people to leave them alone so that they can carry on with our business. And there's a lot of that happening even in building and infrastructure projects.
I've heard in infrastructure and building.
Yes.
But who are these people?
Often it's immediate community members who are saying we're not being empowered, or you're not hiring enough of our people.
Okay.
Or you know, why are majority of your employees not from the immediate community, for instance? So the big question then is, are this so-called extortion mafia, is it political or purely criminal?
Look, from the way you have summarized that, many of business people are saying these people, extortionists, are mainly or normally from those communities.
More often than not.
Yes. I've seen it in the Northwest. Yes. I've seen, and I know of people in the Northwest who were saying, and publicly, not in hiding, who were saying most of tenderpreneurs or people who get tenders in the Northwest are either from Limpopo or Gauteng, and they can't accept it anymore. So if you think the company from Gauteng or anywhere else in the country is going to get that, whether it's government business or private business, then they will have to leave some money within the community.
Yes.
Fresh, as a socialist, if those people are doing that to take money from people conducting business in their communities and land, I'm saying that is the right thing to do. And I'll tell you why, and the courts have agreed with me. The courts have agreed with me because after the murder of the Marikana people, courts ruled and courts have passed laws in this country. You have used mining as an example to say the mining communities must start benefiting from the mines in that area.
Sure.
People must not just come and take platinum in my own land in Lihurutsi and they take diamonds somewhere in Botswana or diamond somewhere in Kimberley, and they leave a hole. They leave nothing there. The community is poorer. Look at mining communities all over Africa, particularly in South Africa. They are the poorest communities. They are sitting on diamonds. They are sitting on gold, on platinum, on anything else, uranium you can think of, from Phalaborwa right to the Northern Cape. Those communities are poor. If the laws of this country were applied, that the Department of Mineral and Energy, or at that time Mineral and Energy, has taken them to Parliament and Parliament has passed the laws, then they are doing the right thing. Force these people to can leave money. But if it's individuals, you know, Botsang and Fred seeing Mr. X doing some business there, and we say it's for protection, to protect you, we want some, if for every 100,000 you make, we want some 20,000, then that's a criminal act. That's a criminal offense.
But often that's what it is, though. Often these people who say we're representing the community are not. They're representing themselves. And often you'll see a guy driving a new bucky all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But the community are still struggling.
And they pay. The business people pay. Yes. They're equally corrupt.
Yes.
Why did they pay? They allowed this. It's the same as paying Jojo. You know, extortion.
What would you have a business person do? That I've got an operation here. And any disruption means it cost me, I don't know, a million, 5 million, 10 million in production.
That would have been in production. When they should go to the state. And it looks like this thing has been happening. The state has failed business people in the country. That's what I'm saying. Mm. And this thing of extortion, if you grew up, I grew up in Randfontein. It's a mining town.
Sure.
I've seen it happening in front of my eyes as a child. Mm. We knew that Brahmamang is not working with his brain dude, but he's always having a stack of cash and miners are coming there to pay money. So this extortion is not new. The government, the business people, number one, allowed it to happen. Sure. Number two, the government allowed it to happen because it had politicians. And this is where I can link it to politics. It had politicians in there. They were benefiting from the whole thing. You know, the head of police, or what do you call it, the police station head or commander is in the pocket because he can't put in order to protect that, but he also wants a cut.
You might even find someone from the union who's also getting a cut.
I wanted to come to say unions and who are union members, most of them, and I've spoken about unions before, to say I don't trust, you know, unions, because they also are linked to political organizations. There's always in this umbilical cord that was never savage after the liberation movement struggle. You understand that unions are linked to political parties. So they betray their workers, they betray the communities, and they sell their souls. But you know, Fresh, few months back, before I went, it's just that I couldn't get that episode. And I hopefully one of the viewers will comment on it. I vividly recall before the elections on this platform saying to you, watch how if the ANC loses elections, there's going to be a war, a turf war for monies, for contracts, and for business. I've said it. You know, sitting on this platform before the election, I said, there's going to be a war. And let me tell you where the war comes. We all know, for especially some of us who grew up in townships and who have close contact with local municipalities, most of political office bearers or politicians who are not in government and are sitting at headquarters or regional quarters of political parties, they are actually the business people. They will have business to can supply either paving or water or whatever in that community while they are politicians. And now that there is a new kid or new kids on the block, now they can't eat anymore. You understand? They can't do their unethical businesses anymore. They can't conduct themselves the way, for example, the ANC would have run a municipality A to Z. It was them and them only in that particular municipality. But now there's smaller parties coming up. There's the Patriotic Alliance. There's Inkatha invading. There's controversies here and there. So it's exposing the corruption that was in municipality. And I don't say the ANC corruption. I'm saying wherever there was corruption in the municipalities. Because if you look at these extortion cases, mainly are in municipalities.
Sure.
They are not in provincial governments. You don't hear them mainly in provincial or government. They are in certain metros which have infrastructure development, which have housing, or what do you call it? It's housing, you know, human settlements. you know, free, low-cost housing being built. And when you look at the people who were benefiting from that, it's people who are a secretary of a branch or a region or a district of a political party. Now they can't continue with their business anymore because their fellow politicians, either in the council or in the provincial legislature, are watching them. They are being exposed. There are people asking questions. I did say it months back to say, wait until they lose power. The other thing also is this story of political parties taking money from their deployees to say, you'll get this tender fresh, but you must contribute a certain percentage of your tender to Mokato, you know, to the organization.
Build a school.
Yes, you understand? But they can't anymore.
Build a clinic.
Yes. But they can't contribute anymore because they are no longer alone.
Yeah.
Understand? There are other people from other political parties who are watching them with hawk's eyes. There's been compromised positions whereby the provincial government, for example, in Gauteng, is saying to the metros in Gauteng, we must start working together for the sake of government of national unity or provincial unity or local unity. So everybody else wants a chunk, a piece of chunk of this cake. And it has created a whole lot of corruption and exposure. And I said, that's why people are. And they're not stopping. I mean, I've heard the Xhosa King during the past week, he's going to get into trouble. You know that he mentioned the premier of the Eastern Cape,
Mabuyane,
and one MEC there. She said, no, I know it has been happening. They're benefactors, they're getting money. And he says, if they take him to court, this is the part that I like. He says, take me to court, I will provide evidence that you have been benefiting out of this. Now the premier and that MEC, they've laid charges against the king. I want to see what the king is going to provide. Understand? But he is brave. We can sit here, me and you, and talk about allegations. Another interesting element on this extortion thing that became of serious interest to me, the economic freedom fighters in parliament raised a motion and suggested that this matter must not be handled by the portfolio committee of police because they are saying the police have failed to can contain and handle this extortion, these mafias and all that. I want to agree with the EFF. The police have failed. Why do you still want the same portfolio committee to go and deal with such a big thing? Because now it has become clear that it's bigger than we thought.
Sure.
It is not just few people asking for money. Guess who supported the economic freedom fighters in parliament during the course of the week? Their former MP, Mzalane Manyi. You know, 3 weeks back, he was an MP of the EFF. Now he's with MK. He rose in parliament and he supported the EFF motion to say, let us establish an ad hoc committee that will look at all these cases of extortion, especially in the Northwest, Eastern Cape, Western Cape, Gauteng, and KwaZulu-Natal. Those are the notorious. I'm surprised Mpumalanga is not involved. I'm very surprised.
Especially the coal belt.
Yes, I'm very surprised.
There's a lot of trouble that
Trouble, yes, I know.
From community representatives.
I am very surprised. Maybe their deal is still in good hands. You understand? Again.
Maybe it's an ecosystem that they've gotten used to. So that's why.
It's not a problem for them. Maybe also it's because the ANC is still in power in Mpumalanga. But they are in power in the Eastern Cape. You know, that's another thing. And guess what? The ANC in parliament and the Democratic Alliance opposed the motion by the EFF and MK. They say, no, they want the portfolio committee to handle this. Now, you ask yourself, the two main political parties in the country that are so seriously concerned about crime, all remember, this is not just white-collar crime and extortion. Yes. It has murder in it as well. People get kidnapped, people get killed. And the DA and the ANC says, no, we don't need any special force, any special committee to look into this. Why would they do that? They are very quick to establish committees and you know, investigating arms and many other things. You can investigate serious crimes. But this particular one that they claim to be taking it serious, they don't want a different committee. They want the same committee that has been overseeing this process to continue overseeing it. How can they do that? I mean, it's a disappointment from the ANC for me, and the DA that has been lamenting about crime. It's very disappointing. But what do we expect when the the former, the, it's not even the former mistress, two archenemies are in one bed. You know, when you go to bed with your former mistress, it's understandable. But when the somebody who comes from nowhere, like the DA, who has opposed you, you know, vehemently over the years, says, no, we agree with the ANC, we are not going to establish any special unit to investigate this extortion. So people will die more. Sure. This thing will not be solved. But for me, fresh, it's criminal and it's politically linked. It has to do with corruption. It's not just people wanting money for communities. If they do, thumbs up to them.
So are you saying the money trail is longer than we care to admit?
It is. Mm. It is. It's the money trail. If proper job and proper investigation is done,
sure.
Trust me, a lot of political heads will roll or a lot of political names will pop up.
Sure. We are running out of time, but quickly. According to the DPSA, in the employ of government are about 6,000 foreign nationals.
I've been in government for many years. That's nothing.
Yeah.
That's really 6,000 is not for an unemployed qualified South African to hear that there's a Mozambican, Zimbabwe, Malawian in government employment. They will say, but it's not fair because those are not scarce or specialized skill. But again, I will refer people to the labor laws of this country, to the immigration laws of this country. A person who has studied and lived in South Africa and has a permanent residence permit or a work permit is allowed to can work for any institution, including the government. So if people are saying it is not right that our own government is employing foreigners on normal administrative jobs, fresh, I've said to people before, and somebody during the course of this week in one WhatsApp group brought up that article, né? I refer them to what I wrote 2 years back to say, go to the Treasury. I can't remember what we were discussing. And I said the other problem with the Treasury, and it happened, unfortunately, under Pravin Gordhan, from SARS to the Treasury. And colleagues at SARS and the Treasury can hate me. I don't give a damn. Key strategic positions in the Treasury are occupied by foreigners, mainly Zimbabweans. I've got nothing against my beloved brothers and sisters from Zim, but I'm saying key strategic positions. And I'm asking myself, people like Dondo Mukhajan, who was the DG, when the advisor, you know, when the senior manager in your office as a DG is a foreigner, what do you think about that? Don't you trust your own people? But this started under Pravin Gordhan, and it go to SARS, you'll see the same is happening. And it's simple positions, public administrators, accountants, you know, auditors, and people who are in strategic projects. Most of them, you go to the Development Bank of Southern Africa, which is sitting in South Africa, funded mainly by us in South Africa. Most of the people there are foreigners. Our laws allow it. Our politicians have allowed it. I've referred people to the army. Go to the South African National Defense Force. Some of the generals there are foreigners. And we have heard the reasons. The reasons have been they fought alongside Umkhonto we Sizwe in exile. So they became children of South Africa by fighting along us. You understand? And they were swallowed into the South African National Defense Force. What do the people want? Our constitution allows, our laws allows the people that we have voted into power for all the years from Mandela time, they did not see anything wrong in employing foreign nationals. One, it's not illegal. It's not against the law. Two, politicians didn't see anything wrong with it. So why are the people crying?
Exactly.
I want Gaitin McKenzie to start jumping up, my friend, and say, Mabahambe. I want Gaitin McKenzie to start with Hugo Brooks or Brooks Hugo. Who's the coach of Bafana Bafana? I didn't even know they were playing during the course of this week. Gaitin McKenzie has been talking about employing foreign nationals in positions that South Africans can take. I expected him, the first position to question was the head coach of Bafana Bafana. Do you think in South Africa, with the Peter Musimanis of this world, we don't have coaches that can replace that foreigner? He's a foreigner, whether he's doing a good job or not. But how many coaches need work in South Africa? Soccer coaches. So this thing of us, of having double standards, is not going to work with us. Understand? It's not going to help us with anything. You are sitting with a Bafana Bafana coach who's an European, white European male. And you still want to go and question and a black African female or male sitting at Treasury or at the Department of Public Works who is employed with paper. But what the government should do, I don't know why the DPSA brought this thing up, but where there's smoke, there's fire, something is cooking. Mm. They must go and check how those plus minus 6,000 people got their resident status and citizenship.
Oh, yes.
I'm telling you that, for me, the focus is there. It's not to say they are employed by government. They are allowed to be employed by government. You go to universities, how many foreign lecturers and professors, academia, are foreigners in South Africa? From UNISA to VETS, VETS to UCT, everywhere, a lot. I'm saying, don't focus on the cream. Don't focus on top. Go and dig and check how those people got their work permits or their residence permits or their IDs.
Especially because a lot of those people, depending on how many years of work experience they have, would have gotten their papers at a time where...
Yes, especially during the transitional phase.
It was easy to get
it
papers.
It was easy. Fresh, I can tell you, I joined the government, I joined Foreign Affairs in 1993. I can tell you, between 1990 and 1996-97, that period, that 7 to 8 years period, the country every those from exile and jail wanted to accommodate their fellows, those who were in power, the apartheid government people, they had black people who were spies, who were serving the apartheid regime. They had to accommodate them.
Sure.
I once told you a story that when I joined Foreign Affairs, there was one black diplomat, a certain Mr. Banda.
Sure.
And I was young, I was 20, fresh. I'm like, how this Banda, and he was proud that he's from Malawi. And he was the first black South African diplomat politically to can represent the country. It didn't make sense to me. It had to be a Banda from Malawi who was a black South African diplomat in the apartheid regime.
Yeah.
He was compensated. He was a South African citizen. Eventually, he was naturalized. So people must go, as you say, they must go and look at that period.
I was offered papers when I was a student. It was 95.
Yeah, but you see, you are a mohu.
I was offered papers for $500. I was offered an ID, a birth certificate, and a passport.
Yeah.
I was a student. And I remember saying to this guy that I'm going to be so successful, I can't afford to have any papers that don't make sense.
Exactly.
I told him already that my goal is I'm going to fly so high. My papers can't be
do a mess. It right.
Exactly.
Do it right. And look at you today. People will be digging today, actually, to say,
no, they've dug. There's nothing to find.
Yeah, if you didn't do anything wrong. But again, crime doesn't pay.
Sure.
And it catches up with people. And I'm saying a lot of people are going to cry.
Sure.
And a lot of people are going to be exposed. I've been in the system for too long to know that. I mean, we had a whole Speaker of Parliament getting a license through a back door. What do we expect as a country? A whole Speaker of Parliament, Madam Speaker, she stood up and said, I never went to the driving school or to a testing center, but I do have a driver's license. What do we expect?
Yeah.
You understand? And the problem in South Africa, one is the system, two, it's us.
Yeah.
Forget the benefactors of crime. It's us who commit the crime.
And because there's no consequences.
Yes.
A friend of mine was, a high school friend of mine, was in the army, and he bought his driver's license.
Yeah.
Probably about 30 years ago. The army found out not too long ago. He was dishonorably discharged.
Imagine after 20 years.
Stars.
For a driver's license.
A driver's license.
Now the
consequences are key.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that's why I tell people and I tell my kids, I will never commit crime, especially no matter how desperate I am. It will catch up with you at some stage or the other. Look at us now. We are going to pay for some of these criminal activities because now there's a French company that must print new driver's licenses for us. Like when they change number plates, they change driver's license, we must pay because these other ones, almost half of them are fraudulent. You understand?
Yeah.
Look at how it impacts on the lives of ordinary, law-abiding citizens. Now we must pay because there are criminal people in government who are taking kickbacks and who are, people are so corrupt, and I've said it before, people are so corrupt that even we want to even pay cool drink for somebody doing their normal duties.
Yeah.
And this is why it's catching up with us. But the after effects of the old days of Home Affairs are catching up with us.
We are out of time.
Thanks, brother man.
Waiting, shout to that. We need to go. We need to go now.
Okay.
Where do we find you online, sir?
Botsangm@gmail.com, fresh, and 082-485-9100 on WhatsApp.
Sure.
And at Botsangm on all social media handles.
Great stuff. That's another episode of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politrix with Botsang Modimo Amemuyilwa. Thank you for hanging out with us. Please, please, please remember to subscribe, to like, share the links, tell everyone that is willing to go politricking with us every single Saturday morning on YouTube and across all podcast platforms. Coming to you from AM Studios, downtown Johannesburg, we're part of the Africa Podcast Network. Shout out to Trevor at Pezulu Works for the cinematography, Otis Fraser for all of our imaging, and our executive producer, Keletso Modisakeng. This episode dedicated to show producer Thabiso Sikwane. Rest in peace. We miss you, and we'll continue to do things the way you'd want them done. Till next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves.